Coming up in today's episode, Tim talks about his trip down to see Starhopper. Mars 2020 rover gets a flying helicopter, and NASA doubles down on humans on the moon in 5 years. And Ben disappears. Let's get ludicrous. Hi, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about fun science stuff that is changing our world, that's going to make the future something special. I'm Joe from the Answers with Joe YouTube channel. With me is Tim Dodd.
Hey, it's me, Tim Dodd, the everyday astronaut in a house instead of a car this week. And joining us this week, of course, is Ben Solens.
Hey, guys, what's up? It's Ben Solens from Teslanomics. And you know, it's funny, they just repealed a law that was preventing people from living in their car here in San Diego. So Tim, previously, that could have been both one and the same.
Dang.
So they repealed a law that was keeping people from living in their car, so now you can live in your car and you couldn't before.
Correct. You know, this whole van life thing that's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always weird. Okay. Like, you repeal a law that prevented something, meaning now you allow it. You're like, wait a minute.
It's a double negative.
Yeah. Yeah. That is one thing that I always wonder is, like, where, and that's probably the question, that's probably, like, the debate, is, like, where do you park then? Like, where can people legally, like, stay parked for a while?
Yeah, there are a few public spaces, and there's overnight parking in a lot of neighborhoods, that kind of a thing. What it came from was there was like basically homeless people living in their cars, which makes a lot of sense if you can't afford a house. But they were, you know, living there, and so there's like trash and debris and stuff, and it was just like in someone's neighborhood, so they're complaining about it. So they banned it, and then now there's like public spaces for people to park and stuff. So because it messes with the census counting as well, because it's like how many people are homeless versus not. So right. It's a whole kind of weird thing going on there.
Do they have, like, restroom facilities and stuff at some of those parking places?
I don't know. I don't frequent them. But there are some public facilities, for sure, all around kind of the more populated areas.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's just the ocean, you know.
Yeah. I could actually live in the Model 3 now. A Model Y or X or S would probably be better than the 3 to live out of. But, you know, it's not bad. I slept in it. Climate control makes everything better. That's all that matters.
Did you find it turns off after 30 minutes, or did it stay on all?
It'll stay on, I think 4 hours is actually what it will stay on for.
Mm.
And then, like, what I found, pro tip if you're sleeping in a Model 3, for me, I like to sometimes have my knees bent at, like, a 90 degrees on my back, you know, like, I just kind of like to have them, like, up and stuff. And that's really hard to do if your knees are in the trunk. So I put my head in the trunk where it's darker anyway, you know, especially like as the sun comes up. So head in the trunk, feet laying flat, like towards the front of the car. And then like if the stuff turns off after 4 hours, you just get on the app and turn it back on.
It should just keep the temperature at whatever you set it at, right?
Yeah.
Like it should go hot and cold or whatever.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah. That was the thing I loved about. So when I slept in the Model S, when me and my son went camping, he slept in his car seat because he whatever. But my head was towards the trunk, and it was the coolest thing because it's all glass back there in the Model S. So you're just like looking at the stars, just hanging out, you know, super cool. So
that is cool.
Model Y will be the same kind of thing, I think.
Mm-hmm. The one thing that that would be really nice, not the one thing that would be nice. The one thing that surprised me, even it was like 80 degrees in Texas, and I was sitting there in the day filming like stalking Starhopper, you know. And I ran climate control the entire time. It only lost like just over 1% an hour, keeping it at like 65 degrees in there.
Nice.
Which is amazing. That's nuts. Like,
yeah,
that's so cool. And it just goes to show that like it really doesn't take much compared to like driving the car. You know, that battery's huge. And driving a car at, you know, 80 mile an hour on the interstate is a lot more energy than just running a compressor, you know.
So you slept in your car while you were down there, or did you get a hotel?
No, I had a hotel one, but I got there at like 8 a.m., rolled up at 8 a.m., and because I drove overnight that one night. It was the last time we recorded, I basically closed the laptop and drove through the night and got there at 8 a.m., which, come to find out, believe it or not, like, I'm not one to typically do that. Like, I'm normally like, nah, I'll bow down by like 2 a.m., you know? But supercharging actually made it like because you're stopping and you get up and you kind of walk around, or you take a nap depending on what you need, you know, like it made it really easy because you get those like 20, 30 minute breaks in every hour and a half, every 2 hours. And like I got there and I didn't feel that tired. I took another little, you know, slept in the car for like 2 more hours once I got there.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel that tired, and it didn't like totally destroy me. So it was interesting.
You're ready for kids. You don't need sleep. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's how that works.
So how long were you down there, and what'd you see?
So I arrived Friday morning. And just to let anyone out there know, if you are planning to see Starhopper, don't try going to Boca Chica Village anymore. Now they're beginning testing. So, Brownsville is kind of the biggest city nearby, right? And there's one little road that goes, it's like 20 miles or so, where there's, when I say nothing, I mean nothing for 20 miles. You get out, and then there's this beautiful beach, and like a coastline, like 5-mile-long beach, 8 kilometers long, right literally on the Mexican border, like factually right on the border. You can see Mexico from where they're stationed. And so you get all the way out there, and that's like the closest you can actually physically be, but they're starting to close that stuff off more and more and more. As they're beginning to test this vehicle, obviously, they're pushing back. Like, the problem is you might drive 20 minutes and then get turned around. Mm. You know what I mean? Without, at that point where you get turned around, you still can't see anything. There's, like, trees and stuff. So, word of advice, if you want to see any action of Starhopper, don't try driving out to Boca Chica Beach anymore. They shut down the whole beach. You know, they shut down everything. They turn, like, they do a whole sweep. They fly a helicopter around the Coast Guard and everything. I mean, this is a test of a vehicle that's the same, you know, has more propellant on it than, it's about the same amount of propellant almost as a Falcon 9, I think. Like, it's, there's a lot of, you know, it's a fully loaded, fully fueled beast, and you can't be anywhere near that thing. No one is near that thing. It's not just like permissions like, oh, only SpaceX can, no, all SpaceX people are a mile and a half away, you know. It's a very dangerous vehicle to be anywhere near. Yeah, so that being said, don't go out to Boca Chica Village unless you know the sheriff. I don't know.
Could you get close with one of those, like, water hoverboard things, you know, that just kind of, like, lift you up and you can see it that way? Would that work?
Those only exist in San Diego.
What? Yeah, that's, like, a cool San Diego thing. That's, like, a cool guy thing to have. They don't do that in Texas. Maybe they do, actually. So the word of advice is if you want to see it, go to South Padre Island, actually. South Padre Island's only about 5 miles away. The southern tip is. There's a lot of really tall hotels, too, that you could probably sit there on a balcony with some binoculars and have, like, the best view in the house, you know?
I thought this was going to be a plug for your channel all of a sudden. If you really want to see it, head over to
Everyday Astronaut. No. I did it for 2 days, or 2 different days. I was actually down there for basically 4. I was there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, left Tuesday morning. Yeah. I learned a lot. I learned that South Padre Island is actually really cool. I always thought of it as, like, spring break, you know? Like, I just think of it as, like, yay, like college kids being... And it was actually still spring break season, and it wasn't that anymore. They said that everyone now goes to South by Southwest for spring break, and that no one goes down to South Padre. So now it's, like, normal and cool and, like, a really nice beach, and, like, there's, like, nice hotels and stuff there. So that's going to become a hot spot here because they're going to be launching rockets from there, and that will be – like, there is not that at the Kennedy Space Center. You can't get that close at Kennedy Space Center. You know, the closest, like, hotel you could be at Kennedy Space Center is, like, 15 miles away basically. So Boca Chica is going to and Brownsville, South Padre Island is going to offer like something that no other launch pad in the world will offer. So it'll be nuts. Like, that'll be really cool. And that's going to be happening really quickly. For me to just keep randomly ranting here, telling you about my experience. So Friday, I decided I wanted to get explicit permission and make sure it's OK that I live stream and that I wasn't doing anything wrong, you know, by SpaceX basically, and got the do whatever you want, you know. Okay, so I did film with my iPhone on a tripod in like 30 mile an hour wind, cutting out signal because you're just on the absolute verge of, you know, literally you're 20 miles away from the nearest tower basically. You're or I guess there's probably a tower like on South Padre Island, but it is terrible signal. So I'm just like cutting out constantly, you know, 140p type of situation, and shaky as all get out because of the wind. And I have all these people, why don't you just? So Saturday I go, all right, guys, it's fine. I'll play your game. So I went out and got a cell phone booster, like what semis use to like boost a cell phone signal, like 53 decibels. I got that. I ended up buying like a cheap little hyper zoom camcorder that can run all day because like my A7s and stuff you can't really run them, you know, via like PC or anything. I got a different capture card because I didn't bring a capture card with me, and I set up a whole live stream. And on Monday I sat there and like just sat in the comfort of the car, kicked back in the back seat and watched it from the back seat. And it was really boring. Yeah.
How? So wait, where did you buy all this stuff?
Best Buy.
Okay. They had, yeah. That's a problem I've always had. Not always had, but sometimes traveling, you're like, crap, I forgot that one cable or this thing, and I need this thing. And you're like, where do I go to get that stuff? Like, electronic stores have disappeared.
Yes.
And that sucks in some ways,
and
right?
And really weird things when you're trying to deal with, like, live streaming and stuff. Like, I had the hardest time because I didn't have a USB 3.0. Like, I don't have a standard USB A type 3.0 on my laptop anymore. Mm. And it wasn't liking converting, like, via a dongle. Dongleopolypse. So
that's right, because it's like just for power, that one, right?
Yeah, it can't. Yeah, there's all these things. I don't
otherwise
know.
So it's like a $300 dongle from Apple, right?
Yeah. Yeah, here's a why don't they just, I don't remember if we did this on the show, why don't they just put on the power brick like the HDMI, USB A, a card reader, because they want the laptop like to be skinny and thin, but then like your power brick that's already bulky, plug that in and have
like half
that
the size of
the
laptop.
Yeah. So anyway, I made an impromptu live stream situation with a checklist. I don't know if you guys happen to see that. Maybe I'll try to share my screen here real quick. I was pretty proud of being able to pull it off last minute like that. So it ended up being, it was fun to just sit there. I don't know why it was fun to sit there, but it was. And really, honestly, quite frankly, virtually nothing happened. Here is a live stream or a screenshot of my live stream. I made a checklist because I got, of course, the same questions every time. Where is this? What is this? Time of test. So that's why time is just the shrug emoji. Length of test, like a second, maybe. Maximum altitude, literally inches. It's tethered. Then here's the status bar, which hurry up and wait. Fueling tanks, more waiting, crossing fingers, engine ignition, evaluate pants, and cheer. So I just went through that checklist as I waited.
So your live stream was just looking at Starhopper, not of you talking at all.
I was talking the whole time, too.
Oh, like, okay.
I was just answering questions for 4 hours straight. And occasionally I would flip back to me. Like, if
this
you
is
know,
a young man's game,
happening.
People. This is a young man's
game. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun though. Actually,
I'm gonna need a nap just after talking to you guys. So.
Yeah, that's right.
But what I found out, or just after like being down there and stuff, I realized like they're literally going step by step with this thing. Like they aren't doing. People are like, they canceled the test today. It's like that's probably exactly what they intended to test. Like when I was down there, I saw what looked like a LOX dump where they just like spin the LOX pump, probably the LOX pre-burner. And all of a sudden there's just this big cloud of evaporated gas under the vehicle. Cool. Like that's what I saw. That's probably exactly what they were testing that day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, it's not like, I don't know. It's step by step at this point. They're just like, literally mm-hmm. we'll do one thing. Once we know that's okay, we'll try this next thing. Once that's okay, we'll do this next thing until they get all the things and they're confident in everything. Then they'll light the engine. And at first it'll literally be like a 2 second engine ignition and it's physically tethered to the ground. It'd be the same. It's basically a static fire. It is a static fire, period. Mm-hmm. They just don't have hold down clamps and like a big, pretty flame trench and stuff to do it for a long period of time per se. But, it is a static fire at first, and then eventually, once everything's good to go, they'll slowly work up on getting it to actually hover and hop and fly around. And when that happens, it'll be really hard not to fly down to Brownsville. I'll probably fly next time, because 4,500 miles altogether was too much.
So, speaking of static fires, have we got a static fire Falcon Heavy yet?
No, that should be
like today or something, right?
Soon. This weekend, maybe. I haven't actually heard an update on that yet.
I just got
next time we're recording podcasts, we'll know. Yeah,
I just got the invite from Tesla to confirm for the event, for the launch.
Sweet. What do they say? Like, do they offer you? Do they say?
Do you want to read it? Let me see.
Yeah,
you're invited. Let me see if I can pop this out to a new page so you guys.
Yeah, I want you to pop that out, Ben.
So you don't get all my other emails.
What show podcast space. Am I on here?
Come on, Ben. Show us what you got. Hop it on out. Okay.
Okay, Tim. Calm down.
Okay, Tim.
All right.
You've been in the car.
So you're invited to the SpaceX Falcon Heavy launch, Secret Level 3. I got this last night. Are you guys seeing this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations. Join us Sunday, April 7th for exclusive viewing. Please note the date is subject to change within hours of the launch, as Tim has noted. Mm-hmm. It is a rocket launch after all. To ensure you don't miss the exclusive event, we recommend scheduling your accommodations for at least 2 days following the announced date. You will receive a detailed agenda in advance. Your discretion is appreciated. So I guess we kind
of nice.
Screwed the pooch in that last one there.
Oops.
Well,
that's what happens when you send emails.
There's not much saying there. There's not much. Maybe they don't want, like, once you get the itinerary and stuff, they maybe don't want that being very obvious, you know?
And so there was a follow-up email, but I'm not going to show that one. And the follow-up email just said, hey, we have a block of rooms at this hotel in Orlando. And so that's what I was trying to figure out was like, okay, how far away is Orlando? And it turns out it's like an hour away. So I'm just kind of looking at it going, I don't know. Like, or maybe it's easy just to like land and get to the hotel versus like land and then drive an hour to Titusville or Cocoa Beach.
It is. I would recommend, honestly, like if you're going to be there for a few days, like I think you're planning on, Orlando is a cool place to actually be. There's a lot more to do in Orlando. But at the same time, like, Cocoa Beach, like Joe and I were talking a little bit while we're waiting for you earlier, and Joe's kind of looking at like Port Canaveral area, and that place is pretty cool too.
Yeah,
there's some restaurants and stuff there, and there's the beach. So
I have some friends in Orlando too, so maybe I'll just that makes more
and if it's
sense
free, if they're paying for it,
dang. No, they're not paying for any of it.
Oh,
you just get access.
Okay,
yeah. Is there a place I can watch a man wrestle a crocodile? Sounds like a thing to do in Florida.
Does medieval times do that?
I'm sure this exists, right? this is not fiction here. But I'm just wondering if that more Titusville or more Orlando.
I feel like that's more the Everglades. Like I feel like you got to go down to like Podunk or something to find that. You know, I don't know. Let's do it.
Orlando
though.
Is where you watch a man wrestle a mouse.
Mm. Ooh, yeah. Get it?
Mickey.
Now we just got sued.
Yep.
I didn't say the word Disney. Damn it.
It was a good show, everyone. Thanks for joining.
I come to find out, like, a lot of people, I think, are planning to go down to this Falcon Heavy again. It's going to be another huge event.
Yeah. I think I'm just going to go to whatever the Tesla invite thing that I got is and not try to mess with any of the other options, especially because I'll have my son with me, so it'll be a bit of a trip.
Yeah.
But I'd love to meet up with you guys.
Joe, did you get – should we just record down there in person?
Well, I won't be there until Sunday or Saturday.
I'm going to record like a special bonus version.
As long as you have a 4-year-old screaming and throwing things, sure.
Joe, did you end up getting tickets? I forget.
I was going to talk to you today and then like buy everything after we get done with this.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's getting close enough now that I'm feeling a lot more confident. I'll do some double checking on my end. I might fly out to this one, believe it or not, just because we have a tax appointment on the 4th. And I don't know if I can physically drive down quick enough after that tax appointment and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
Woo, fun stuff. So should we get on with the actual news stuff?
Now that we're now,
I guess some of that was news.
Yeah, let's hear about it.
What's the first?
We talked about a lot of space stuff. We could jump over to Tesla for just a second.
Yeah, because there's more space stuff to be had. A lot more.
Yeah,
I've talked too much already. I want to hear Joe talking. Ben and Joe, take it away.
Tell me something, Joe.
90% of this podcast is just me sitting here like, I'll chime in with a joke whenever something comes to mind.
Which is great. What do you have for us, Ben?
Okay.
Ben is now, he's like, oh crap, I had to talk.
Yeah.
Normally we have like an order that we go in.
I did throw it off.
All right, so check this out, guys. If you're just listening, I'll try to describe this. You have here a demonstration of what is called, they're calling it Enhanced Summon. I've heard it called Smart Summon. This guy has a Model 3, and he is pressing a button on his phone, and the Model 3 is leaving a parking space and coming to him. It's driving around. It's turning. It's navigating the parking lot without a person in it. And so this is the new feature. I like to consider it Batman mode, where you can like hit a button and your car comes and picks you up, as Batman did. And so this is apparently out there for folks in the early access program, which I don't think any of us are in, unfortunately. But it's just really cool to see these additional new features. I know, you know, there's probably people screaming, self-driving, I told you, it's here. This isn't that, but it is pretty cool. And I don't know how I feel about this. Like, all the tests I've seen are done in kind of very simple parking lots. I don't know about where you guys live, but where I live, there's, like, hills and all kinds of, like, little bumps. And, you know, it's not, like, the most basic thing. So apparently Enhanced Summon is coming. What do you guys think?
Wow.
One step at a time. I mean, it's going to be kind of rudimentary and slow at first, but, you know.
I think that's really cool. I'm exactly with Joe. Like, it's slow for now, and it's pretty rudimentary. But that will be really cool once it... I would like the option, like, you can see it ping-ponging around trying to figure out what to do. Mm-hmm. I would like if... Wow, that is weird to see, though. I would like if, like, you could just, like, confirm, like, this route looks pretty good, go for it, you know? Mm-hmm. Instead of it, like, trying to constantly tweak it, like, oh, now I'll go here. Well, maybe this. No, I'll go this way. I hadn't actually seen that before. But. Well,
yeah, the thing that's weird, too, is I don't know if you guys have tried this, but for me, Summon, like, my driveway has a little, like, hill in it, right? Like, a little bump. And it won't even attempt to go over that bump. I mean, it's maybe a 6-degree incline or something. It's, like, nothing. Mm.
But it perceives it like a curb or something like that.
Right, and it just stops. I mean, Summon, even into my garage, I have these, like, gym mats on the floor, and they're maybe a quarter inch tall, and they're just, like, rubber mats. It won't go on those, right? Even when I'm pulling in, not in Summon, just pulling in, driving, it starts beeping and flashing, you know, the parking sensor is going off. So I'm excited to try this. I'm just curious, like, does it only work on very perfect roads, or, you know, like this guy that we're seeing here, looks like it went down a little bit of a driveway incline. So maybe they've, you know, cranked it up to Mad Max mode or something.
So I'm just curious. I couldn't tell from this video, but the car backs up and then it starts going forward again. Is he pressing the same button the whole time telling it to come to him, or is he like saying back up and then.
Yeah,
I think is it
automatically doing that?
I think he's just holding.
He can't even see anything on his phone.
I think there's just go back to that one where you see the, where you can see the screen. It looks like you just are holding down a summon button, really, you know?
There it is.
The one that had the map on it?
Yeah, the one that kept showing the map.
Yeah.
Right there.
Release the button to stop your vehicle. Yeah, it looks like there's just a thing, I think.
The only thing I don't like is...
It's so crazy.
I shouldn't have to hold the button, right? Like,
it's a safety thing.
Imagine you're getting out of a restaurant and you want your car to come meet you out in front of it. Just hit a button and let it do its thing, you know?
Well, maybe it'll eventually get there. Yeah. I, for one, right now, would like to be able to take my thumb off of it and make it stop if it looks like it's not doing, or it's walk if it's heading towards something and I'm not feeling comfortable about it. Mm-hmm. I would rather be able to make it stop.
Like, I think right now it's just the, you know, it's going to be slow and pretty limited and pretty pointless and very, like, no one will actually use it like this, really, but... you know, they'll train it. It'll get better and better. And I think someday this will, of course, be a thing. Like, I think, you know, look at how much already, like, for me, I think Navigate on Autopilot has improved a lot since it came out in 6 months or whatever. And I feel like this is just that same type of thing. Like, this is just going to 6 months, a year later, just get better and better and better until we're like, we forget. Oh, yeah, it used to not be able to do that. And it used to be a total joke. Like, this is just the next step in it.
I just think this is such a human thing where, like, we've had this technology for like 2 days and we're already like, it's so slow. this car that's driving itself is doing it so slowly. You know, it's like it's driving itself. Like, no car has ever been able to do this before. I don't think. Yeah. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's just funny. Okay. Like, the second we get something, it's suddenly like, why isn't it better?
Thanks a lot, Ben.
Okay, so I wanted to just kind of like throw this out there because I've never really used summon other than just as a parlor trick to show it off to people. That usually is like the coup de grace when I'm showing it to people. Mm-hmm. Is they're like, ooh, pretty roof, ooh, nice stereo, ooh, cool acceleration, and then I get out of the car and it's like, it's driving itself.
Yeah,
you know, that's what always gets people. But that's all I ever really used it for. I didn't really have any functionality in my life in any way. But I have started using it lately. And I wanted to kind of see if this is, I guess this parallels with you guys or whatever, but like, my garage is really small. It's really tight and it's really hard to kind of get around the cars, especially if they're dirty, like trying to avoid touching the car because it rubs off on your clothes and whatever. But,
you have to make that MC Hammer move you just made.
Yeah. You gotta shimmy down. So anyway, One day I just kind of needed to take something out to the trash, and I was going through the garage and I didn't want to have to maneuver around everything. So being lazy, I opened the garage door and just hit summon and let the car back up. And it's tight. It's really tight. But it did it. It backed up just fine. So I was like, hey, all right. You know, so I can kind of back it out into the carport. It gives me room to walk through, take out the trash. And then I tried to like make it come back forward. It did not like it. It backed up okay. But going in, it was like, and it would get right up and then like completely turn the wheels and like go into the wall. And I'm like, and so I couldn't quite use it like that. So like, I have gotten to where if I need to, you know, get through the garage, I'll just summon the car out, then do my thing, and then just get in the car and drive it back in, which is kind of a bummer. But I was curious if you guys have used it in that way and if you have more success in your garages kind of situation.
I don't actually use it.
Tim in the garage and summon are not friends.
Yeah, well, that's that one time. That wasn't from summon. That was that's because the user profile thing is surrounded entirely by the garage door button thing. So it's easy to fat finger it. That's what because I did it once too and didn't realize it. And that's when we realized like, oh, the garage door button basically surrounds the user profile like derp. But I've only had someone ever once be useful, and that was that time I think I told you guys about this when it was a blizzard, and I was parked in my sister's at her house, and my brother-in-law needed to get out, so I just backed the car out into the like totally out to the end of the driveway so he could snake around, and then I pulled it back in all from the comfort of his living room. Like, that was pretty slick.
That's the same use case I've had, not because of Blizzard, obviously, but like we have kind of a tandem driveway, so we were trying to pack the cars around. However, it just doesn't work for me because, like I said, there's like the tiniest incline, and it'll stop immediately. Like it'll go down it, but it won't come back up.
Right. Too much. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've not had really any actual use of it.
Practical use for it.
Yeah. I do want to just park on the street here because where my office is, I can see the street outside and just mess with people out on the street.
Yeah.
But again, it just goes back to the party trick nature of the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, I think this is the first step in it potentially becoming less of a party trick.
Right.
The
being
first
able
step
to actually
of,
meet
of
you.
Many, you know, of many. I think eventually, you know, again, in a year or two, this will just get more and more useful and faster and better.
It'll just be a fancier party trick.
Yeah.
It'll be a parking lot party trick.
But can you imagine if you had, you know, your hands full of groceries or something and or like, you know, you're at a store and you want to just like not walk all the way out to your car. That sounds so lazy.
Or if it's raining or something like that.
Yeah, if it's raining, there we go. Bring it in nice and close. That'd be crazy. That'd be nuts.
I mean, first off, who even goes to the grocery store anymore? I don't even. No, come on. I push a button and they
who
arrive at my house.
Who eats anymore?
Yeah. I just have an IV and someone comes and, you know, I have a blood boy. And he comes over.
I'm a breatharian.
That's another Silicon Valley reference.
Yeah.
It's a real thing. It is a real thing. How insane is that?
Talk about futurism. Joe, can you do a video about blood transfusions?
I actually just saw an article pop up somewhere that was talking about how dumb the whole blood boy thing is.
Yeah, and how
or the young blood, taking young blood and injecting it into yourself.
Let Joe explain that for people that have no clue what we're talking about.
I wouldn't get into the details because I haven't had a chance to really like research it or anything. But yeah, I mean, so there's this theory, and some of these Silicon Valley billionaires are doing it now, where like, I guess there's enzymes, antibodies, I'm just going to throw medical jargon out, in younger blood that if you get a blood transfusion from somebody who has younger blood, it like benefits you in some way. Gives you more energy, helps you to process, you know, food better. I don't know. It's supposed to have some benefits, and all these like rich, dying old people are doing it to try to. I mean, how science fiction is that?
Yeah. You know? How vampire is that? Like, that is weird.
Isn't that what Mad Max Fury Road was? Wasn't he didn't they have him plugged into a blood bag and were just like draining him while they were driving around?
Yes.
I mean, that's where we are now, I guess.
That's
so
life.
There's kind of a thing like this too called these home IV services. Have you guys seen this?
Oh,
where someone will come give you like an IV.
No.
And and they have them like it's for hangovers essentially.
Okay.
Yeah, jet lag, weight loss, whatever, those kind of things. And they'll come like, you know, give you basically for hangovers.
So, oh my God.
Or you could drink water.
That is way
too
much.
Just a suggestion.
Work.
No way. How hungover do you have to be to need an IV? Like this shouldn't exist because if you're that hungover, don't drink that much. Like that's impossible.
Well, there are other use cases here than just being hungover, but yeah. Yeah, you're right. I could see imagine if you're a rock star and your job is to be a rock star and then the next morning you have to be on Good Morning America or something. And okay. You know, I could see it being some legit use. I mean, that's a pretty extravagant use, but like you
for
know.
The six people that are waiting to get on Good Morning America and partied too hard the night before. I mean,
that's a huge market.
It's a big
have you seen all the people that go on Good Morning America?
At least one a day. Sometimes.
Man. So
they
Joe,
do have one of those. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to go off topic there. Go keep going.
I think they have one of those on here in Dallas. There's Greenville Avenue. That's one of the places where there's a lot of bars. It's like one of the party areas. And I was down there for the St. Patrick's Day parade this last year. Well, a few weeks ago. And anyway, they had this little. Not one of those dock in a box places, but it was kind of like that, and it had like B12 shots and and like hydration, and so it might have been one of those things. So it's like go drink and party, and then go get plugged into some
Well, and there's like in the mountains now, it's really popular to have like oxygen bars. You know,
like I've been to one of those. Yeah,
that I kind of get because I get really badly affected by altitude. I kind of understand it. You know. But,
The whole blood thing, I mean, that's what Lance Armstrong and those guys were doing was
blood
they would doping. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel conflicted about this, but they would go train at high altitudes and get their super oxygenated blood. And then they would just take that out into bags of their own blood and then, you know, save it for mid race and then just get a transfusion, you know, after a full day of racing. And the next day they're just like good to go. I mean, I kind of feel mixed
so
about
it's
that.
Their own blood.
Yeah, like you're not taking drugs, but I mean, it's a technique, maybe.
I think it was who was that one comedian back in the day? What's his name? Daniel Tosh. You know, like way back in the day.
Oh,
I think one of his original stand-ups was like, "I want my athletes doing all the drugs. I want them to jump higher, run faster. Like, let's do this. Let's push humans to the limits. Like, what are we doing? Like, I'm kind of in that boat. Like." Why don't we just open it up and see what happens?
If they're willing to wreck their bodies for our entertainment, then, you know.
They already are.
The football guys are getting CTE all the time. They're destroying themselves anyway. It's like you might as well.
Like, do you remember when baseball was actually good to watch? That was because of steroids. No. That was Mark McGuire, Jose Canseco, you know. That was
well, this is way off topic, but I think that Pete Rose should be allowed into the Hall of Fame for the whole gambling thing, because like major sports are now like sponsored by DraftKings and these like
gambling
entities. So it's like integrated into the sport now, and like Pete Rose is not allowed to.
Las Vegas is going to have a team, you know.
Really?
There you go.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just like how can he be kept out of the Hall of Fame after all of his accomplishments for doing something that is now like standard practice, you know?
So it's
that's a very vague interpretation of the whole thing.
But it's like history. It's the opposite of what happens generally, where things don't age well. Like this for him is aging better.
Yeah.
Right. Huh. So, yeah. Joe, to answer your one thing there about a self-driving car, have you guys seen this? This is a taxi in Russia.
I've heard of Yandex.
Oh, yeah. I did actually see this.
Yeah. So they demoed this at CES 2019.
That's where I've heard of it.
So if you guys are listening in, we're watching a self-driving taxi in Moscow in the winter on snowy roads with a guy that is not touching or doing anything, and it's navigating on icy, snowy roads with people, with everything.
Yeah, that's extreme conditions. That's amazing.
Yeah, and they did this thing on like a, I'm going to misquote it, like 1,100-kilometer road trip or something, and it drove 100% of the way.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's maybe a little bit more
ahead than
Advanced Summon.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's coming. Like, anyone that doubts that cars will never drive themselves is hilariously short-sighted. I mean, I frequent the subreddit self-driving cars, and for the most part, it's a pretty good community, but I love it. They just instantly, like, no matter what, will like hate on Tesla, saying like their system's just never going to work. And I'm sitting here like, it's not really like, I don't know. I like what Elon says. Like, we use cameras to drive now. Like, there's nothing inherently, you know, cameras are a valid system. I know everyone's all obsessed with like LiDAR and stuff, but like, yeah, I mean, why not just use pure vision? And
well, not to jump into a why don't they just, but I did see on Twitter at one point, this might have been weeks ago, where somebody was asking, why don't they just put like sensors in the stoplights that would interact with the cars and make the cars stop at stoplights? But I know that the reason why, you know, Tesla specifically doesn't want to do that is because, I mean, you would have to change the entire infrastructure of the planet.
Yeah.
And they want their car to be able to work wherever you take it.
Geofencing is the thing, right? Like, imagine on the freeway, if you could, you know, just put little things and sensors in the road to tell the car where to go, it'd be super easy. Not super easy, but far easier than it is now to accomplish that. You're right. But you can't depend on that. I mean, that's really the rub with all this, and where I'm still a skeptic that we'll have like true self-driving within 10 years is because in order for that to truly be attainable, I mean, these things need to be able to go off road, right? Mm. There needs to be able to be a tree on the road and have the thing automatically figure out how to drive around it. Things like that. Mm-hmm. And
that's level five.
Four.
That's straight up full on level five.
Four and five are the same. The only difference is a level five car is designed to not have a human ever drive it. So
like it doesn't even have inputs. Right.
So right, like there's no steering wheel, there's no anything. So
I thought the level five was like off road; it could go anywhere.
That should be level four. Level four it means that it should never ever have to have a person drive it. Level three is where it's kind of this danger zone of like a person still has to intervene, but it can do 90% of it, kind of a thing. And so yeah, I mean it's funny. Like there are all these cases, you know, people, especially when I do a video, I get tons of comments on stuff like this. Like, oh, well, Waymo has it. I'm like, yep, in a specific area, in a specific thing. Like once you do that, it's my analogy was, it's like saying I can dunk on a 6-foot rim. I can dunk, sure, but not really, you know? It's like you...
That's a good analogy. Yeah.
If you put conditions around self-driving of fully autonomous, then it's not fully autonomous. Like, this is just how it is, you know?
But this is where I still stand by, like, okay, say you do the same commute every single day, And there's already 200,000 plus Teslas in the United States. Everyone logs their commute every day. You're doing the same thing, and every day you turn on autopilot and you start to train it the things that it's doing wrong. You know, you get home from the office, you pull up the app. The app says, like, what, you know, here's where the places you flagged, what happened. And you train your car for those scenarios because you're doing it every single day. So within a month, all of a sudden the car totally knows your route, knows what it's doing, knows what to look for. And then it can look for, you know, the edge cases there, and it can get better. And if everyone's doing that, all of a sudden, like, most routes in the United States would all of a sudden have people having trained the vehicle for those cases, and the vehicles will know what to do better. You know, I don't know. I mean,
yeah, no, I mean, you're right.
Crowdsourcing is incredibly powerful. I think everyone wants their car to do the best and safest job it can every day. So, like, everyone would be motivated to make sure that they're, like, flagging things that were wrong and, you know, saying that, yeah, this was a perfect drive or whatever. This was, it did everything perfect at the end. Boop, you know, little green check mark. Ding, you know. No problem.
Well, sort of on this topic, were we going to talk about the stoplight thing with Teslas?
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen any of the videos of that?
I haven't seen a video of it. Do you have one?
I don't.
Well, a guy like hacked it, didn't he?
I thought it was in the latest beta program update thing or something. That
yeah, I could have sworn I saw a headline from Electrek or something that had...
Well, I have it, had a video, you know, I have the update that says, like, it will now be reading stoplights and stop signs.
Okay, well,
I haven't seen it do
it.
Anything. What was that?
Well, tell us about it then.
Here, I'll pull up. Electrek, of course, has an article. I'll pull this up just so you can see, because it's not showing up for me yet. But this is what it's supposed to do. If someone, the hacker that is.
Oh, this must be what I was thinking of.
Yeah. What's his name? He's always on here. I don't remember, but yeah, they already figured out how to make it so it can read the lights, and it shows up here in your little speedometer,
just
to the bottom, like lower left corner of your speedometer on your car, and that's pretty cool. So far, he says it's not very reliable, not very good, but I see this as, like, you know, if, as long as the car is beginning to try to learn the stoplights and everything, like, this is the same as us training it to do, like, the turn, you know, changing lanes and stuff, which is what basically people have been doing for the past 6 months for Navigate on Autopilot, is we've been confirming and training the vehicle how to go around slow traffic and all that stuff, you know, with the confirm. And I think this is, like, its first steps of learning how to read stoplights.
Mm-hmm.
And we can see that now that someone figured out that it's already in the the software.
There's an actual update, though, I thought. And so it's not just, like, hacking into it at this point.
There was an update, and I have that update, I believe, but they had to hack it in order to show this. So if
I thought that I had the update, too, and then I tested it, and it totally did not stop at the red light. Not that it stopped. It didn't do anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't see anything, but look at that. It does show that it read the light, saw that it was red, and then saw that it was green. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So this is coming to step by step, just one thing at a time, you know?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see how that works in Las Vegas.
Oh, God, I know. But eventually the vehicle, you know, I think that's the type of thing you can train. And
oh, it all is, yeah. I mean, that's why. So I had a video recently where I suggested that Tesla was 100 times further ahead than anyone else. And that's because they have more data. That's really all that matters in this whole game. Like all the AI, machine learning models and architectures and stuff are generally open sourced and free, and you can just go look at it. So a company could spend years making these beautiful, amazing algorithms, and they'll just give it to you for free, because without the data, it's practically useless. So so really, the name of the game in AI and machine learning, all these things, is who has the most data. And Tesla, with a fleet of over 500,000 vehicles worldwide, clearly is the leader, like, not even close to anyone else. So that's really the thing. Yeah, I mean, and it's just we're going to get there. It's just the question of the million edge cases, right? I think that it's going to be real exciting when we have. I mean, like level three is going to be amazing. I think when we get there, probably we'll get there within 5 years. The next million edge cases are where it's going to be a long time before it's like get in the back of your car and go to sleep and wake up in, right. yeah. you know, at Kennedy Space Center or something. It's that is
with no place to charge.
Yeah.
Hey, that's coming. I found out Coco proper, like the town of Coco, will be getting a supercharger. So it's right off, like only, I don't know, 2 miles or something off the interstate. So
oh, nice.
That's way more convenient.
Do you guys want to finish the Tesla news with the referral program and then move on to space?
Yeah. Go for it.
So the referral program is back.
How many more Roadsters have you won?
None. I am not eligible. Everyone can shed
You're
a tear.
You're on the blacklist.
Yeah. No. Which I don't care. I'm actually happy to not participate in this round. I'm not publishing my code out there, any of that. But for those of you that are wondering, now it's actually really cool. So if you use someone's code, you get 1,000 miles of free supercharging, and so does the person that that referred you. Then you get entered into a raffle to win a Founder Series Model Y every month, and a Founder Series Roadster quarterly. Both will be signed by Elon and Franz.
That's cool.
Yeah, and so if you already have a Tesla with free supercharging, then you get 2 entries for a referral instead of the added 1,000 miles, which you don't need. There are some limits and conditions and stuff like that. It's only for new orders, and if you've won a Roadster in the previous program, you're not eligible for that again. And I think they've added a little bit up tier in terms of what's okay and what's not okay. So advertising, spam, anything misleading or annoying. Social media bios, which is an interesting one. Like, I think that's putting it in your like profile or something on Twitter.
Really? Okay.
And then paying or offering incentives for use of your code. Mm. This is an interesting one because that's a very vague thing. And I met a guy at the Model Y unveiling that said he was offering people test rides, just like come down and like you can ride in it with me. And they took away his free Roadster because of that.
Oh, wow.
That seems a bit extreme. Huh.
That definitely seems extreme because I feel like that's definitely in Tesla's best interest to let someone's out there like selling cars for you in
yeah.
their free time.
Yeah, I think it's a judgment call on their part, right? It's hard to say what an incentive is. Yeah. Like if one of us said, hey, we'll mention you in a video for using our code, is that an incentive? Because right. if a company wanted to advertise in one of our videos, we'd charge them money for it, right? So, yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, how do you define that? What is really – I don't know. So, yeah, so that's a vague one. Okay, our YouTube channels, woohoo. Informational and fan websites, so, you know, Tesla Roddy, Electrek, people like that. And social media sharing, so there. So it's kind of funny that YouTube channels are called out explicitly. I think it comes back from where we when Elon said no to YouTube channels, and then we talked to the guy that runs a referral program, and he's like, no, YouTube channels are fine. Because it's like, well, what about Instagram TV? Or what about Facebook videos?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those kind of things. So, yeah, so that's kind of where it's at. What do you guys think? Are you guys hoping to win anything?
I don't even have
I put it back in my description of my videos, just in case. But I do think this is better. I think it's more sustainable, and I, you know, we had talked about this before. I definitely thought that the referral program was one of their best ideas, especially if they're not going to be spending money on marketing. You know,
yeah, yeah.
If they want the car to sell itself, then we might as well give people incentives to get it in front of people. You know,
yeah. I think it's a good call. I think Ben, your video about the, you know, referral program was pretty potent and on point about how important it really is and how what the value of it really is. So,
yeah it's insane the amount of like hype or marketing they got just from offering that up. You know,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. For those of you that haven't watched Ben's video, definitely it's eye opening. You should definitely watch that.
Yeah, it's crazy the amount. Now, the one thing that I thought was interesting I think the program is great. I think this is maybe how it should have been to start, or you know, just slightly like Model 3 shouldn't have counted. I think was the big deal that kind of messed it up last time. But now, I'm excited. It's going to be cool to see people win these things, and what that does. Now, I'm curious if people are going to be like starting YouTube channels and trying to build up their social media stuff as a result of this. In the video where I talked about it coming back, I mentioned that we're probably not going to see any of the bigger YouTube creators do the videos on it, because there's not like, it's just a, like a raffle at this point. Mm-hmm. So like the David Dobriks of the world and Casey Neistats and people like that, where you're like, you know, would they have made a video about Tesla if the referral program didn't offer them a free incentive? Like, I'm not really sure. So hopefully it's more of a grassroots thing, and like more kind of people without these massive followings can win. And, you know, I'm hoping that yields good results for him. But I'm a little bit unsure because clearly when you have David Dobrik making 8 videos and getting 60 million views on those 8 videos, that goes a long way for, especially with his audience, convincing younger people that Teslas are what they want when they get older. So, you know, there's like branding here versus like, you know, pay-per-click marketing. It's an interesting thing to see. And also, I don't know if you guys saw the article, but the guy that actually runs a referral program just left Tesla. So he's no longer there. And so I think they have a new guy running things, but, you know, shouldn't matter in terms of people's chance to win.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I just saw the article come out yesterday. So,
dang. Well, should we move on?
Hit us with some space.
Space stuff.
space.
On this episode of What's in Space.com. More space. All right. So, one of the big things that I see is getting exciting. We've never talked about this on the show, is NASA is getting, they've done some really exciting, flight tests of their helicopter that's going to freaking Mars.
What?
You guys, have you heard anything about this?
No.
Joe, you've probably heard about this, right? Yeah.
I was surprised this was part of the Mars 2020 rover. That must be a new addition, because back when I did a video on the Mars 2020 rover, that was not really a thing.
I think it had been talked about. Like, I haven't followed this program too tightly, but I'm pretty sure like they've wanted to do this for a long time. They just hadn't. It never was assured. And what this is it finally got full blown. Like, I think last year it got totally earmarked and confirmed and all that stuff. That it's going to go fly with the Mars 2020 rover. And Mars 2020 rover is basically Curiosity rover 2.0. Like, it's literally the same chassis as Curiosity, which is really smart. You know, why redesign the wheel completely? Literally. it's the same platform, basically, with little different science instrumentation. But they're including a freaking drone, like a helicopter. This is – it's unique, too. It only has two propellers. They spin opposite of each other. They're on top of each other. So they're on the same axis. They're really big carbon fiber, propellers. This thing is really, really lightweight. I think it's like less than like, 4 pounds, so 1.8 kilograms. It is really lightweight, but it's pretty big. Its wingspan, I think, is over a meter. That's because, so think about this. Here's the interesting thing about flying a helicopter on Mars. Mars only has 1% of our atmosphere.
Yeah.
That's like flying a helicopter on Earth at 100,000 feet. That's nuts. But
so is that Mars harder only has or easier?
Way harder, because there's not as much bite, you know? You don't have as much air to...
Gravity is also less, right?
Gravity is also less. Gravity is like 38% or whatever. It's less than 40%. So you have about, you know, 2/3 less gravity, but you have like 99% less air. So it's definitely been, I actually cannot believe you can fly a helicopter on Mars. It just seems like it's kind of breaking some laws of physics almost. Like, it's going to be too hard. But these things have to spin crazy fast, like 9,000 RPM. Yeah. Or sorry, 3,000 RPM. I think that's pretty fast for a blade that big. Here's a little video of it. This is just cool stuff. It's going to be deployed from the belly of Curiosity. After a while, or not Curiosity, sorry, Mars 2020. It's tempting just to call it Curiosity. I think it kind of poops it out, and then it goes and flies. Flies around for a little bit, takes some imagery. This will also help with navigating, you know, for Mars 2020. Like, the rover itself will be able to get some, you know, better, like, think about this. They can predetermine the landscape and know for sure what the rover is going to be getting into and know, you know, that it's going to be safe. And then the thing just lands, transmits the data back to you know, back to Mars 2020. It takes a long time for it to recharge, and I think it only has like a couple minutes of flight time or whatever. But that's so freaking cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Man.
Yeah.
So I think we have our headline, NASA poops drone on Mars.
NASA to poop a drone. Yeah, I think that's just like, this to me is like about as cool as it gets.
So
I just think it's so smart.
Have they not heard of DJI? I mean, I feel like.
Well, honestly, it probably is like DJI and those, you know, the free market system and the people that have pushed this technology so far that makes something like this even possible. You know, mm-hmm. Otherwise, think about all the technology that, the you know, shrinking of the size of all these like things. I mean, that's. I can't imagine that being done if DJI and other companies, you know, if quad racing and things like that hadn't become such a big thing where it's such a competitive place. I don't think NASA would have really been able to develop a system like this as easily. Because this ended up being, I don't remember the number on it, but it's a relatively inexpensive program. And yeah, so Mars 2020, as you can guess by the name, is to fly in 2020.
Fly.
It'll land in 2021, though.
I was going to say, yeah, fly. Because it was to take 6 months or something, depending on the rotation and all that, and when you launch.
Yeah, it's launching in July. I think it'll land on Mars in February 2021.
Hmm.
So, yeah. I think that's pretty exciting. What are you guys' thoughts? Do you see this going well? Do you see this being a good thing?
I think the landing is always more... The biggest challenge when it comes to getting to Mars. So like if we can land the thing on Mars, I feel pretty sure it'll survive and be okay. No, I had heard them talking about drones on Mars for a couple of years now, but it was always it's that 1% atmosphere problem, you know. But it looks like this is a, like you said, a very large wingspan, very lightweight. It's clearly carbon fiber, and it can only fly for, like you said, a couple of minutes. So it's very limited, but the fact that they're able to do it at all, I think, is really impressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is an interesting design, I think. Very curious if somebody would ever explain like why they went there versus a quadcopter or, you know, octocopter kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I imagine I'm speculating here, but the rotating opposite direction rotors right on top of each other might sort of maximize
the downforce.
Pressure. The downforce. Which I wonder if they need all they can get, you know.
I wonder actually if it can work like a compressor because you know, like a jet engine, how all those fan blades basically just compress air for the next fan blade and compress air. By spinning, and I wonder if there is some of that effect going on when you have dual rotors like that spinning, you know, on top of each other. That one could, and the cool thing is you can control your roll by changing the speed of one prop or the other. So, you know, that's how it can turn around. It. I don't quite get how it flies forward. I wonder if they shift weight or something, and that's
you tilt down.
But how do you tilt when both rotors are the same? Like you can't tilt.
The rotors.
Maybe you can. Maybe they
figure it out.
Maybe they know. I guess all they'll just do this.
I'm sure we have some aerodynamic experts in our comments that could set us straight on.
I'm actually texting my buddy right now. He works at NASA, and his specialty is rotor design.
Oh, dang. Wonder if he has some thoughts on this thing.
He was a contractor doing some stuff at for some other company, but he worked at Moffett Field in San Francisco where they have like the world's largest, I don't know if it's a world, but like the largest wind tunnel where they can fly a full size 747 inside of it. It's that big.
What?
Yeah. Wow. It's great. And so his study, his everything was about rotors. So for helicopters and stuff like that. So...
I'm looking this up. That sounds fake news.
Someone farted in Tim's room.
Yeah. Tim has a.
I'm looking this up. I don't believe that there's a wind tunnel that can fly a 747.
Moffett Field. NASA. So.
I believe it. Humans can do anything.
Maybe we could get him on to explain, or he can just debrief me, and then next time
let's
we can talk
see
about it.
Here. Moffett Field.
I wouldn't be shocked if he actually worked on this thing.
By full scale, do you mean a full scale miniature replica of a 747? Because that's about what I'm seeing.
Hmm. No, this is what he said.
A full scale miniature replica.
It's a big wind tunnel, but it's...
That's like, I've got that same shirt, but it's different.
Yeah. It's
a genuine replication.
People say, like, are these planets life-size? pointing to my MOVA globes for those of you listening.
Yeah.
Can you get them in life-size? Oh, my God. Yeah, you're standing on one. It's free. Yeah. I don't know. Someone will tell us if Moffett Field wind tunnel is big enough to fly a 747. I'm just going to type in 747. This is going to be fun. This is why the internet is so great. You don't
Tim
have to be an
really
expert.
Wants NASA. To take you down a peg, Ben.
Yeah. Well, that's his thing, you know.
That's my thing. I feel like that's your thing, Ben.
My
you're
thing.
The guy that's like, you're the guy that's like, nah, it's not going to self-drive.
So,
find me. Okay. That's not bad. That looks like the vertical stabilizer.
So we're looking. So that's how big it is. So there's the scale. We're looking at it here. Come on, show the people standing there again. So this is kind of just an image of the wind tunnel, as you can see.
That's big, but you ain't fitting a whole 747 wingspan in there. I tried clicking forward on your video. That's how dumb I am.
Yeah, maybe
click
not.
On that. That's not a full. That's not even a full size.
Well, you can test out wings with it, and
yeah,
this is you know what you get when you listen to your buddy at the bar that works for NASA, right? This is the stories he tells to pick up girls. Apparently,
it's basically an indoor skydiving thing turned on its side.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I still like it. It's still cool. Don't get me wrong. It just ain't putting your 747 in there and flying it around.
Well,
would be kind of cool if you were tethered to like walk against it and see how far you can go up the wind. That could be like NFL training.
Yeah,
like
I was
going to
say this would be
the
next like Titan Games or something. Oh, getting sued again.
Yeah. Actually, it'd be really fun to like, you know, wingsuit. Obviously, you can do that like in a vertical tunnel, but it might be more fun to do a wingsuit like that where you're horizontal wind.
You just get like slammed against the ceiling immediately.
You're like, oh, bam,
straight down onto the ground. But think about
it's concussion
this.
City.
You could have it. You could have like a treadmill of like fake trees going by you. So you have to like weave between them.
People do this.
Is this what VR is supposed to solve for?
Yeah.
No, what's the point if there's not a little risk? 100 mile an hour trees.
You could fall off your
160
couch.
Kilometer an
That's,
hour. What was
you
that?
Could fall off your couch. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it's dangerous.
Exactly.
Or you could just do the hurricane experience. They could just throw tree trunks at you and fence posts.
Oh man! Speaking of, why don't they just throw tree posts and squirrel suit at you? Should we get into today's why don't they just?
Let's do it.
All right, today's why don't they just? Guys, should I make some sound clips for everything?
I would love a little sting right there. A little dun dun dun.
Yeah,
I want a new segment called Joe Rants, and it's just like I want to write this angry like a metal thing, just like, and then at the end it's like Joe Rants, and then I just want Joe to rant about something. I think that Joe Rants. That's all I want, and then I want like a why don't they just, you know, like I'll come up with some things. Don't you worry.
You just recorded it. There you go. Just use that. Clip it out.
Well, today's Why Don't They Just comes from a listener named Robert Brown, at Robert_M_Brown. All right. Why don't they just, why didn't SpaceX use stainless steel for Falcon 9 when they started developing it? Did they just happen to not think of it yet? Or was there some advancements in stainless steel that had to be made before it became advantageous? We've kind of talked about this on the show. We've had some pretty lengthy discussions really about stainless steel, but you know, that brings up the point. Why wasn't this done on like Falcon 9? Why isn't this done on other vehicles? I want to know your guys' thoughts, starting with Ben.
Well, I think they should use vibranium, because I saw this movie and that looks like a winner. Why don't they just use stainless steel for, why didn't they? Yeah. I would have to imagine that there's some sort of advancement in kind of the material sciences space that led to this, and when you're trying to get things out the door, you maybe don't have all the time in the world to research and perfect them before you need to, you know, like send a rocket up and start making money. So my guess is, again, the economics probably pushed them to do something that they knew would work at first, until, you know, and then continue researching these for, you know, what we got now. That's my guess.
Okay. Hmm. Joe?
I don't know that I have a good answer for this, but I remember Tim, you actually said something about them having a new alloy that they were experimenting with, or that they were testing, that would make this more possible to be used as a heat shield or whatever. It's an ongoing design process, and it's changed. I mean, that's one of how many things we could point out that have changed since the beginning of the whole BFR ITS thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's just something that they kind of came upon later on and realized that the cost, like Ben just talked about, is a lot better than the carbon fiber. And no offense to Robert, it's kind of a weird question. It's like, why didn't you think of this before? Well, because I didn't think of it before. You know, that's how life is, you know?
Yeah. So I think there's two main reasons why a vehicle like the Falcon 9 didn't use stainless steel. Because let's be clear, first and foremost, stainless steel has been used on rockets since the 60s. So it's already, like, it can be advantageous and very, very close to aluminum. But in the long run now, with advanced aluminum alloys, for a normal rocket, aluminum makes more sense. You know, like the Falcon 9, aluminum makes sense. And in order to make steel thin enough to really work, you have to do that, like, balloon tank structure like the old Atlases. And even, like, Centaurs is semi-pressure stable, where if Centaur were to lose pressure, that's the upper stage of, like, the Atlas V rocket. It's been the upper stage since Atlas III, I think. And, it's been – the Atlas Centaur was actually in, like, the 60s even. So it's been around since, like, 65 or so. So stainless steel is still being used today by ULA on the upper stage. And it can actually be thinner and lighter weight than aluminum in some use cases. But the reason why the Falcon 9 didn't go with stainless steel is because the Falcon 9 isn't meant to be fully recovered. And stainless steel becomes massively advantageous when you look at the entire range of operational temperatures. So a Falcon 9, at most, you know, the first stage is recovered, and the reentry heating, you can just put a little bit of extra heat shield or, you know, I think they literally probably use steel or some kind of plating on the bottom of the Falcon 9 as it comes in three entry. The Falcon 9 first stage, though, is only going a quarter the velocity of orbital velocity. So it isn't experiencing nearly as much heat. When you're designing a vehicle that has to operate from cryogenic temperatures up through, 1700 degrees Celsius, you need a different material than aluminum. And that's 99% of the reason, I think, why they actually ended up with stainless steel. They realized this is the right material for this job. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you aren't reusing a rocket, if you aren't reusing especially the upper stage, you know, for a full blown like orbital reentry, and you're experiencing all that peak heating at like 1700 degrees, you don't need stainless steel. And stainless steel doesn't necessarily become advantageous to you until you start doing that. You know, carbon fiber, awesome. Awesome material. Very exotic still. Like, it is really hard to manufacture. The tolerance is it's just, by the time you actually try to make that thing survive reentry, we're talking about a whole different game for carbon composites. And
so is it cheaper to not do stainless steel then?
Stainless steel is way cheaper. I'm pretty sure stainless steel is way cheaper than aluminum even. Stainless steel is way cheaper than carbon composites.
So, like, you're saying it's better for the temperature changes.
Yeah.
And it's cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm missing why they don't do that.
for the Falcon 9, it didn't need it doesn't handle orbital reentry is the big thing with the Falcon 9.
Okay.
The Falcon 9 doesn't experience near that peak heating, even close. So aluminum is the right one for the job there, because I think they're similar in cost. I don't know the price difference between aluminum and stainless steel.
Is aluminum lighter than steel?
So on basically like per use case on a Falcon 9, aluminum is lighter.
Yeah.
And that's basically what it comes down to.
Yeah. So it just wasn't the right tool for the job.
Yep.
Not that it's a bad idea. As you mentioned, people are already doing it.
No.
Yeah.
Then there's a reason why most people use aluminum. But stainless steel, when you're talking about peak heating and the whole operating temperature of the Starship vehicle, stainless steel totally makes sense. and that's basically what they figured out. And I think it just took them pushing and shoving and really, really, really working the numbers. And the fact that they can literally iterate, like, I went out and saw a freaking vehicle they built in 83 days. You know, try doing that with carbon fiber. You have to, like, buy the lathe and then blah, blah, blah. Like, you can't just, like, literally bang something into place and weld it. You know, I got close enough, you know, you can easily see how they're building this stuff literally using a water tower company. Like, that's who is building this is Caldwell Water Towers. So talk about cheap and easy. They're going from hermetically sealed, you know, like crazy medical grade equipment to be able to build a rocket to literally building them in a shipyard. So not only is the material cheaper, working with it is hilariously cheap and simple. And that's a whole nother, we're talking about a whole paradigm shift here when you're talking about using stainless steel. And yeah, you know, why didn't they do that for Falcon 9? It's mostly because in the use case of a Falcon 9, stainless steel would be heavier and you lose out on some of that mass fraction that aluminum has the advantage of in that operating temperature. If you're trying to recover the upper stage, yeah, you'd probably want to go with stainless steel.
Interesting. So, cool.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's why don't they just? I think. I mean, that's for the most part what my understanding would be. Yeah, right tool for the right job.
If you are a material scientist working at SpaceX and would like to comment,
set us straight.
Yes, which I'm sure there is. Lastly, we have we have this to talk about. Our vice president and. NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine. So Mike Pence, the Vice President of the United States, he's also in charge of the National Space Council. He did a really compelling speech the other day. I think it was like when was this? March 26th. So what was that, like Monday or something? Monday or Tuesday or something. This is one of the first times since I've been alive that I've heard someone talk about putting humans on the moon in under a decade. And that to me is pretty dang exciting. Mike Pence was clearly really excited about this, making it sound like this is actually so important that they will fund it. That's the thing. People talk about this stuff all the time, but until money is actually transferred and put into a bank account, it's just talk. And this directive is pretty clean cut, which is actually quite refreshing. And I was quite excited to hear this much, like power behind this statement. So here's what they basically said. NASA is charged to get American astronauts to the moon in the next 5 years. That's nuts. Not 10, 15 years, not by the end of 2030, or, you know, not by maybe in 2030 or whatever. Like, not a maybe. Like, NASA is now in charge of getting humans on the moon in 5 years. Tasked with landing humans on the south pole of the moon by 2024 due to the south pole having vast resources and a lot of water, ice, and potential for mining. They want to stay on – this is an important thing. They want to stay on schedule for flying Exploration Mission 1 with Orion on the Space Launch System next year and sending the first crew to a lunar vicinity in 2022. That's – bold. NASA will continue to use all means necessary to ensure mission success in moving us forward to the moon. Whoa. 5 years.
Especially bold if they killed the SLS, which we were talking about previously.
But they actually they went through that process of, I guess, looking at using SLS or commercial providers instead of SLS for EM1, Exploration Mission 1. They backed out on that. I think they had a lot of congressional political stuff going on, and someone in the state of Alabama was like, nah, you're not taking SLS from us over my dead body, you know? I've said this 100 times, I'm a sunk cost fallacist. Like, they are really actually close to flying SLS. If SLS could actually do the mission next year to fly around the moon, please do. And if they can put humans on it in a year, you know, in 2022, do it. Like, I don't care at this point. I just want it to happen. You know?
When is Starship going up with people, though?
Potentially in 5 years. And actually, Elon did talk about that. So I asked him if they can do it, because here's this is an interesting conversation. And this might be what NASA ends up going for, is a commercial provider. So Elon retweeted, this is what NASA tweeted on March 26th. Speaking on plans to return astronauts to the moon in the next 5 years, Vice President Pence says, America will once again astonish the world with the heights we reach, the wonders we achieve, and we will lead the world in human space exploration once again. Again, clearly, like, there was actually some, like, behind it, you know, not just like, we hope to do something by 2030. Like, this was a directive, and I haven't heard this since I've been following space. So, again, if the money follows, this is something new. And then Elon responded to this, to NASA's tweet, and said, it would be so inspiring for humanity to see humanity return to the moon. And I said, think Starship will be ready to send humans to the surface of the moon within 5 years? And this is the least Elon thing I've ever heard. I think so. For sure worth giving it our best shot. Would be great to have a competitive commercial program to build a moon base that is outcome-oriented, not cost-plus, so you only get paid for safe delivery of cargo. So
what is, Elon, explain that outcome-oriented, not cost-plus. I mean, I love world market, so explain to me what...
Yeah, so this would be the commercial crew, you know, commercial resupply contract, commercial crew, the stuff that NASA's been doing lately, which is, hey, here's your milestone, we'll pay you when you do it. You know, and step by step, like once you maybe fly a demonstration mission, we'll you pass that certification, we'll pay you. Once you deliver cargo to the International Space Station, boom, you're succeeding your contract, we'll pay you. It's not cost plus. It's and people submit bids, you know, so again, with commercial crew specifically, the three main ones for a while were the Starliner, Boeing Starliner, SpaceX's Dragon, Crew Dragon capsule, and Sierra Nevada has this, not the beer company, Sierra Nevada has a Dream Chaser, little mini space shuttle. That got pretty far along in the process, but ended up losing to the other two. Mm. That's the way that we should be doing things. Excuse me, doing things. I believe when you're tasked with something like this, if they say, "Hey, whoever can get us to 5 years, here's the check." Basically, mm-hmm. That's a lot better than you guys get there and tell us how much it's going to cost. You know, which is like what SLS is basically like, "Hey, you guys build it and then send us a bill." And we'll earmark $1 billion a year for you to develop it. Good luck. You know, let us know how it's going. And so it's, you have no incentive to actually get it done quickly.
Yeah.
It's just not in the cards. I would love if they do like a bid, you know, and say like, who can do this in 5 years? So let's see your proposals. Make it happen. And it's going to take some funding. It's going to take some money. Money's going to have to be thrown around. But I would love this. Yeah.
That's awesome.
What do you guys think?
I'd love to see SLS go up.
I
miss me some big old solid rocket boosters.
Yeah, I know. Can you imagine how loud that thing would be?
That's why I want to see it.
People say, I think the shuttle was actually louder than Saturn V. I need to double check that. Because of those solid rocket boosters, they're just like unbelievable. Yeah. And I never got to hear one. And this would be that plus an extra RS-25 and an extra segment, so they're more powerful. I mean, this would be
how far nuts. Away are you at a launch like that? 5-6 miles?
Less, 3.5-4.
And it's still loud, right?
It'd be from launch pad 39B. I think that would be unbelievable. Like, it will make a Falcon 9 or a Falcon Heavy sound like a, you know, a puddle jumper or something. Like, it would just be absolutely insane. I'm going to look at the distance from the VAB, which is one of the places you can be, to 39B, is 3.37 miles. That's 5.43 kilometers.
Look at you.
That would be nuts. That would be nuts.
That must have been in front of him. There's no way he calculated that.
Yeah. No, I'm literally reading it.
In the human computer.
Hey, I like my metric conversions on the fly that are sometimes way off. They're fun.
It's like 100 pounds and 20,000 kilograms.
It's close enough. Something like that.
Sounds legit.
Well, I personally, I would love nothing more than to have humans walking on the moon, especially like one of the poles. The poles offer a lot of cool things.
Yeah, you mentioned about time. Mining.
Yeah.
Like,
it's supposed to be frozen ice in the craters at the poles. That's kind of one of the things they're most interested in, I think.
And so describe what mining means in this context here, because to me that sounds like we want gold or something.
helium-3, is that what it is?
Helium-3, yeah.
Is,
that's a big one.
So it's a very valuable resource that's unbelievably common on the moon. Like, it's like you just like would go, here you go, and like you have helium-3 or something, which is, that's useful for nuclear, is that correct?
For fusion, maybe?
Yeah.
Definitely for fusion, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about like this might be the future where all of a sudden, oh, we have fusion figured out. We need a lot of helium-3. Now we have a fusion reactor on the moon and can do all the moon operations.
How funny would that be if the first fusion reactor is on the moon? We're like, great. Just gotta go to the moon for unlimited clean energy. Sweet.
So that book, Artemis, have we read Artemis?
Yep, I finally did.
From Andy Weir? Okay. Yep. So, I mean, he talks about aluminum on the moon, aluminum manufacturing that also produces oxygen that they use for the habitats, and a big plot point revolves around a new manufacturing of a type of sort of fiber optic wire that's lossless that can only be done in space. So there's like a company trying to corner that market, but that's the fiction part of it. But I think that's that stuff that you're talking about, the aluminum mining and smelting and whatnot on the moon, is chemically anyway.
Is it just me that I just feel weird, especially like with Mike Pence being like, yes, let's go to the moon so we can do mining. It's just, I feel like,
let's get the coal on the moon.
I'm all for it. I don't care. There to be an incentive. There is a financial incentive to going to the moon and going to asteroids, especially with some what are rare earth minerals are not rare on asteroids. Like, let's go out there. Let's become a freaking space pirates and stuff.
This is the Bitcoin argument, right? That scarce resources on Earth are truly not scarce. They're just like currently scarce. So things like gold, which hold a value for seemingly no reason, not nearly the value
because
that it holds.
Because we've decided it's valuable.
Right, basically. Because we've decided it's valuable and because it's scarce. And when we can mine on asteroids and things like that, it will no longer hold that. And so
that's actually a really interesting topic. I wonder if you know, we really got into asteroid mining and all that scarcity in the minerals and resources was not scarcity anymore. Like, what would happen to the markets? Like, how would that just completely throw our economy?
Like, imagine, you know, people talk about we don't have enough cobalt or lithium for batteries and things like that. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, well, okay, let's just go to the asteroid and basically have an unlimited supply.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now we do.
And then what will probably happen is they'll, like, you know, people will hoard it, or like, you know, just like how the diamond industry seems to like only sell and put into the market so many diamonds at a time to control it a little bit. But imagine if you have parked in low Earth orbit, you know, 50 tons of something that's really valuable. Like, you could like trickle it in, you know, like, I don't know what I'm saying, but like,
this would expand upon my whole crazy. I would love if there was somebody that's really studied this and just could explain it to me, but this whole idea that, like, Earth doesn't receive shipments from Costco, from Mars or something, right? Like, everything on this planet has always been here. It's just transformed from shape and energy and stuff like that. So, the notion of, like we're killing the planet is more like we're just killing us. Like, the planet will be fine. Right? Yeah. Like, it's been here for billions of years.
Yeah.
It may change dramatically, and life as we know it may be affected, but generally the actual rock itself is going to be okay.
Yeah.
But if we start mining materials from other planets, we change the whole chemistry of just how our whole ecosystem is designed by introducing new things to it, you know, or an amount of new things, or an amount of things we know of, but just an external amount, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could argue that's always been happening because there's always been asteroids hitting the Earth. In small amounts, which it would be comparatively small amounts if we start doing mining. And I mean, maybe 100, 200 years from now.
Yeah, I know there's like larger amount. There's like people theorize that life began with the what are they called, tardigrades or something like that? That were they fly in on like basically like dust from asteroids or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Panspermia.
Yeah, it's. It's a weird thing, right? But
well, one of the things to remember, this sparked a funny debate. I saw someone on Twitter asking, like, aren't we worried about, like, if we are mining the moon, like, it already is so small in gravity. What if we, like, destroy it? Like, you mine it so much that it, like, falls apart because it doesn't have enough mass. And someone ran the numbers.
That would be.
They said, okay, if we mine as much as we mine on the entire globe right now, on Earth, on the moon, nonstop, starting today, it'd take like 10 million years or something, or longer than the universe has existed. That's what it is. So over like 13 billion years to totally dismantle the moon. And
well, yeah, and by then Earth will be destroyed by the sun, so it won't matter. Right.
Yeah. In other words, the amount of mining we do and the size of the moon is unbelievably different scales of size. Yeah. So even if we do our best job to mine all of the moon, no. No way.
Yeah, like I imagine the moon is still big, right? Like it looks small, but if you're on it, it's not like you can just like take a little jog and go around the whole thing in 10 minutes. Right?
Like go stand at the base of
250,000 miles away.
Yeah. Go stand at the base of a big mountain. And then imagine someone being like, okay, take all of this mountain and move it way down there. Like, you know, all of it. I want all of it gone. Like, that mountain is a grain of sand compared to, like, my house compared to the moon. You know what I mean? Like, that's, yeah, like, the scale is just so, nope, not going to change it.
So, on this topic, a little bit of a tangent, but I saw this just last night and I thought it was interesting. You know, there's all this debate about how the moon was formed, and they have the big impact theory that a Mars-sized planet named Theia smashed into Earth and got spun out and became the moon. The problem with that apparently has always been that when they, you know, took home some moon rocks, and even today as we are landing, you know, landers on the moon and they're sampling the rocks and they're doing tests on it, the isotopes from the moon and the Earth are the same. So if it was like a big impact from a different planet, from like a Mars-sized planet, then we would see different isotopes on the moon than we are seeing here on Earth. But we seem to be made of the same thing. So this new theory, I'm assuming it's new, it was a TED Talk and it was like 2 days old, was basically that we still have sort of a large impact theory, but it's basically arguing that this happened much earlier, to the point that the Earth wasn't fully a planet yet. It was still more of a cloud of dust and gas, and it got hit by another cloud of dust and gas that caused swirling and whatnot, and it spun out a cloud that became the moon and then a cloud that became the Earth, and it kind of became what it became. I thought that was interesting. It's like a new version of the Big Impact Theory that it involves clouds instead of solid objects, basically.
I thought the clouds were always how these things happen, like the rings on Saturn will I believe those will eventually become moons, right? Like they
or they were once moons that got destroyed and then it flattened out into
I thought it was the other way around. It was something where like all the little tiny things start to smash together, and then that actually creates like the magnetic field and the iron core and all the heat, and eventually that gets big enough and then becomes a, you know, kind of a planet, and billions of years pass and there's water.
I know there are tiny moons in the rings.
Okay.
Sort of moonesimals in the rings that are like in the little gaps.
Lunitas.
It's like a record in the gaps in the record.
Yeah.
If you had a giant needle, could you play the Saturn's rings?
I would love to.
You're the company that makes those.
Man, if you had a giant needle, that'd be awesome.
You know, if you guys come to California, we could actually do that. You know, it could be a show where we just.
We saw how that went for Elon. Now look at him.
Tim, is he going to lose? Is SpaceX going to lose certification because of that? I saw this headline. I don't know if it was
fake news.
That's
such a joke. You can't have a company lose Department of Defense contracts because one individual in the company legally did a drug for a second.
But it was all over CNBC, so it must be
true. It must be true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that's overblown. I just can't imagine that would hold up.
Well, and but, like you said, it wouldn't be in their own interest. It would be like, wait, now we got to figure something else out. Crap, that sets us back like 15 years. Okay.
No, that would be in the, that'd be in the interest of, probably the people that are complaining about that are the people that have a lot of lobbying power
trying to get
with like another rocket company or something, you know.
For the record, the moon is 6,786 miles in circumference, which is 10,921 kilometers.
Good conversion.
There you go. I also can read from the internet. Imagine that.
Jumping back a little bit, we're talking about them landing at the poles. Mm-hmm. Another reason to land at the poles and to set up moon bases on the poles is because they're always in sunlight. Because the moon rotates once every month, basically, as it goes around the Earth. That means if you landed like kind of where, you know, Apollo 11 landed, that means that half of the month you would be in shade. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't be able to use solar power and that kind of thing. So if you land at the poles, you'd be able to get solar power all the time.
Good point.
Yep. If you're there's certain places, though, because even, you know, obviously that shifts, like you have to be on top of a hill, but like there's, you know, you can put a solar farm literally like the edge of a crater where it has 20, well, you know, 28 days of sunlight.
This goes back to the thing. When I hear people say, you know, we need solar plus batteries because the sun doesn't shine at night, I want to put like an asterisk on Earth, it doesn't shine at night.
Yeah.
In space, it's always there. It's always doing the same exact thing it does. Mm-hmm. Not always, but, you know, for our lifetimes. So that whole solar array in space thing is pretty stinking cool.
Yeah. I like that idea. And I was about to say, you could probably do that at the moon, too. Like, just have a small array of satellites that are always going around, and it could beam down with microwaves to wherever you are on the surface.
I would love to dig in more on that and understand if it truly is possible to have it be far enough away to where the sun, the Earth's shadow never covers it, and still be in a stationary type orbit where, because the problem when we talked about it last time, Tim, I don't think you were here of this, but it was like, if you put it out there to where the sun, the Earth never casts a shadow on the solar array, then the Earth is going to be spinning. And so you can't just be beaming it down all the time because it won't, you know, it won't be lined up. So it has to be in kind of a, I think it's called a stationary orbit, right, where it's always in the same thing. So could you angle the solar array enough to where the Earth's shadow never casts on it, and so it's essentially unlimited power forever, as long as the
polar orbit.
Yeah, how there has to be a way to just do that. But then the hard part is where does that put your receiving station? You know, is that like in Antarctica or something?
Here, I got an answer for us, guys. So there are – so in geostationary orbit, because in geostationary orbit, you can also do a little bit of an inclination. You know, they can be north and south a decent amount, but eventually it gets to a point where it's no longer actually geostationary. But between so it looks like from February 28th and April 11th, so about a month and a half, and September 2nd and October 14th, another month and a half-ish – they go through the shadow of the Earth once a day.
Dang.
So, and it doesn't say how long. 70 minutes. 70 minutes a day then for 6 weeks. So,
that's not bad.
There you go. Yeah. You don't have, you're in the shadow of the Earth in geostationary orbit altogether about 12 weeks out of the year for 70 minutes a day.
Okay.
But that's why you would have an array of them going around that they could like beam energy to each other.
Yeah,
to
or
the
just
other side of the planet.
Or just for those 70 minutes, you aren't producing power for a sec, you know.
Yeah,
you have to put Instagram down. That's it.
Sorry, everyone. Planet shut off. We're in the shadow. Yeah, or yeah.
That is fascinating. I just love that idea. If we could do that, because it just seems like such. There don't seem to be any major impediments to that. Like we know
other
solar energy, if we can do the phase array or whatever thing to beam it down. I mean, it just seems like, and then you could literally have the solar array like unimaginably large, right? Because you're in space far away, that could power the entire planet, like maybe not the entire planet, but like a ton of energy.
I just don't think that's ever going to be cheaper because you still have to have a ground station. You still have to have, like, you put it up into
transmission
space.
Transmission lines and stuff, yeah.
Is that really going to be cheaper than just having solar panels on your house with a battery pack?
Well, if you live somewhere that doesn't get sun, though.
Just pipe it, you know? Like, if, have most of it in the southern half of, near the equator, and ship the electricity via power lines. That's easy. That's cheap. It's most of the grid's already there, you know?
Just bounce it from where there's sun on the ground up to a satellite, over to another satellite, back. Wait, that's kind of what we're already talking
about. Oh, yeah. Why don't they just? I think we kind of did talk about that once already, but Now you get it again, ladies and gentlemen. Well, kids.
I think we covered everything.
I think we did. We said it was going to be a slow week, but yeah.
And we still.
It was slow in the world of, actually in the Elon world, it was a little bit slower today. We had topics that weren't Elon today. Weird.
Imagine that.
And I said this before we started recording, but I just want to say it for the whole world. Like, I kind of like for there to be low amounts of news around Tesla just every once in a while.
Because
like, there's just been such a bombardment of stuff constantly.
Yeah.
Changing in pricing and different models going away, and seriously, now there's this feature, and now that feature's going away. It's kind of like, okay, can we just like drive our cars? can we just have a minute?
Seriously, anyway. Yeah, I agree that the past like month, I feel like, has been unbelievable. Well, I think ever since like Starhopper was going, and then like leading up, I don't know what was with Tesla like the last month. It was nuts, like constant, more than normal. So yeah, we could.
Those are some big things, yeah. And I don't know if you guys remember, but Elon actually has stated before that he wants a big Tesla story every week.
he's doing it.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, but that was maybe like 2014 or something like that, where he was saying that, where they were probably still like wanting to get press, you know. Now it's like, okay, let's have a little bit less press.
There is something to that. I mean, let's be honest. That's kind of how, you know, Donald Trump won the election. Is he just sucked all the oxygen out of the air and owned every single news cycle. And you see somebody's name enough times, it just kind of, you know, sinks in. And I mean, there's a method to the madness there.
Yep, exactly. So exactly. Well, what are you guys working on?
I can't say what my Monday video is going to be.
Because you don't know, or
because
Disney's going to get. I said it.
it's a surprise.
Okay.
It'll be a surprise.
I like surprises.
Just look at what day it is.
Oh, it's a surprise. Now you ruined it.
Not really.
Okay.
If I said anything about it, it would ruin it.
But. Yeah. What about you, Ben?
Honestly, I'm taking my time on this next video, so it might not even come out next week.
I know that feeling.
I'm digging deeper here. I'm doing some hacking, doing some development work, and hoping to come up with something special. It's also kind of under wraps right now. Also, I have a sick wife and child, so I'm trying to take care of that. So that's kind of more important. What about you?
I still working on that Raptor video. I obviously for the past 2 weeks I've been, it's kind of hard to write and drive legally and safely. So that didn't happen. So I'm back finally to scripting and getting research done for that video. And yeah, I still have stuff that I'm figuring out though every day when it comes to like explaining rocket engines, guys, is rocket science. Like I'm still just like trying to, like, I've seen so many explanations of it and it's hard. Like I love this stuff. Like I love this stuff. I love breaking down, like, you know, when I was 18 years old, bought a motorcycle that transmission didn't work and I took it all apart and figured it out. You know, like I like that stuff, but this is hard. And I don't think the explanations out there to me don't really like, they never have clicked with me. So I'm trying to make it so it can click with me. So hopefully it clicks with other people. That's the hard part, you know? And in order to do that, you have to go like three levels deeper than you're explaining, you know?
Do you get people saying, I love how you dumb things down? And you're like, sure, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. I'm just trying to make it so I can understand it. Yeah. No, but that's the important
thing. That's what my entire
channel is. Yeah. No,
that's like, if I can get myself to understand this, I can get somebody else to.
Exactly. That's what science communication is.
And I think there's only been one or two videos you've done where I'm like, okay, you lost me.
That's a good compliment, though.
There have been videos that have lost me. So
I think you've even had some where you're like, you're just going on and on about some sciencey thing, and all of a sudden you're like, yeah, and if you have no clue what the hell I just was talking about, then that makes two of us. So you know, it's good.
I try to be transparent about that. It's just like, this is what I found. I'm telling you, and this is how I understand it. I could be wrong. Tell me in the comments, and they always do.
Yep. Well, did we do it?
We did it.
I think we did it.
We'll talk off air about when we're going to record next, because some of us might be heading out to Florida.
Florida. Let's do this.
Actually, all of us probably. Dang, guys.
Could get interesting.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll get an episode out. Maybe we'll end up doing a special edition episode or something. If, you know, when we're all together.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Sweet.
Cool.
So we'll all see right. you
in
our
Florida.
Florida.
Ludicrous Florida.
Our Florida future.
All right. I like our ludicrous Florida.
Our ludicrous Florida, which the people I know from Florida consider it pretty ludicrous. So
that will be that. Yeah. That episode will just be called Our Ludicrous Florida. That's so good. That's so good.
Just us with an alligator.
That's what I want to see. I want special all guest. All right.
We'll see you guys in our ludicrous Florida.